Hello and welcome back to Phil Weekly with me, Jason Solomons. On the show this week...
Benjamin! Where are you going?
Oh, to see. I'll send you a postcard.
Write me a postcard from everywhere.
Yes, it's Brad Pitt in The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. His director, David Fincher, who also worked with him on Seven and Fight Room, talks about directing him in this 13 Oscar-nominated movie. And the Guardian First Film Award winner, Joanna Hogg, will be in the studio to talk about her film, Unrelated. And Catherine Shaw, editor of Guardian.co.uk, joins me to review Kate and Leo in Revolutionary Road and the reissue of British classic Barry Lyndon. Director David Fincher has long blazed a trail in Hollywood. Since he started directing videos for Madonna and George Michael, he was the man given the biggest budget ever for a first film with Aliens 3. He then moved on to Seven, Fight Club, The Panic Room, The Brilliant Zodiac, and now The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, starring Brad Pitt and Cate Blanchett. The film has so far garnered 13 Oscar nominations and the same at the BAFTAs. I spoke to David Fincher about working with Brad and The Curious Case of the man who lived a life backwards.
You certainly are beautiful to watch.
Dancing's all about the line. Line of your body. Sooner or later, you lose that line. You never get it back.
I figure you were born in 1918, 49 years ago. I'm 43. We are almost the same age. We're meeting in the middle.
We finally caught up with each other. Wait. I want to remember us just as we are now.
Thank you for joining us, and congratulations on The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Thank you very much.
I have to say, I think is the weirdest film I've ever seen in the mainstream, and I love it.
Okay, good. I was going to say, because this is over. This is over.
It is emotionally one of the weirdest films I've ever seen.
Tell me why.
Because you're asked to kind of go through the normal sympathies with a character, but yet he's old and getting young, and you're thinking, so I feel sort of, I feel with him for his aging. And now, hold on, he's getting younger, so I should be happy for him. But he's sad about that. It seemed to me all human life is there. And then when you get to, he's a baby, and you think, oh, that's cute with his mother and everything. But it's a death scene.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I literally think it's one of the most extraordinary emotional journeys a mainstream film has ever been on.
Well, that was what, when I read the script, I thought, this is such an interesting way to couch this relationship. You know, it's such a interesting way to talk about, you know, I mean, I've said this before, it's an incredibly emotional thing to be there when a baby's born and to cut the, you know, cable and clink champagne glasses mm-hmm. and do all that. And it is great and it's euphoric and you're bringing a life into the world. And it is a completely different act of love to be there when somebody, to hold somebody's hand when they die. And I thought that in all of its complexity and all of its push-pull, I thought that Eric describe something, you know, that was semi-confection throughout most of it, that became this very resonant and real and yeah, difficult.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Eric Roth, the screenwriter there, who I think does fantastic work. It's lovely to hear a film that gives you time to listen to the words, get kind of enmeshed in the text, if you like. Was it the script by Eric Roth that attracted you, or was it the short story by Scott Fitzgerald?
To be honest with you, and I know this sounds just, I had never read the short story. I didn't know it. I didn't read it until the movie was greenlit, until we were making it. And this is only because, this is not out of, you know, a lax attitude towards the classics. But it's that I knew that this was a tiniest little 25, 28 page short. And I had in my hands a 240-page script, so we weren't lacking for ideas. Yeah. We were just trying to figure out what wasn't part of our story. Yeah. And I also knew from meeting with Eric that he had, you know, that the way that he had dealt with the pressure of bringing F. Scott Fitzgerald to the screen was to ignore the pressure of F. Scott Fitzgerald and just toss it and start all over again. And a lot of people, you know, have a problem with that, but I just wanted to create a world that people could kind of get lost in and create a character that you could be with for his entire life. I mean, it is an odd thing to read a script where the character has no backstory.
Yeah.
I mean, where you are literally there for every relevant moment. Yeah. And that's such a... that was a new idea.
I mean, I try and pitch this film to friends and to fellow critics.
Oh, best of luck.
I like it. Yeah, I mean, they say, hold on, wait, have you even seen the advert? Which is a beautiful trailer that you did yourself, didn't you, to Sanson's Carnival of the Animals?
Yes,
I love that trailer.
Yeah.
Beautiful piece. But I say, they say, so he's born old. How do they do that? And I've seen the film, and I keep thinking, how do they do that? How you're going to do it?
Yeah, well... We knew what we weren't going to do. We knew that it wasn't going to be six different actors playing him from, you know, 22 to 29 and then from 30 to 30. You know, I mean, there were very specific delineations in where he needed to be developmentally and the things that needed to happen to him. And it's you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound.
Yeah.
It's
like, can I just talk about working with Brad Pitt as
sure.
well? Because obviously when you exploded onto the tip with Seven, that's a long time ago.
What a nightmare.
But you obviously enjoyed that experience, and he was terrific in Seven, actually. And I think, you know, I think he's a terrific movie star, but I think his performance was great in Seven, and that really cemented him as a career. And I think this is the best thing he's ever done, is The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. I think he's outstanding.
I love him in Fight Club, and I love him in Snatch, and I loved him in Jesse James, and even Burn Without Reading. I think he's always been good. He's one of these people that's, again, there's just so much hormonal discord about, you know, how people are obsessed with him, that in a weird way he gets kind of cleansed between every project because and it's always lovely for me because I get to put a movie in front of people every 5 years or 10 years or whatever, and they get to go, oh my God, he's so good, and you just go, you know, like we didn't know that.
He seems to be quite a fun bloke to work with, and you'd have to have quite a good sense of humor, I think, to actually do this film. I mean,
to have incredible patience. And there were times when I don't often feel sorry for actors, but I did. There were moments in time for both Kate and Brad that I just felt like, oh my God, I don't know how they're doing it. I mean, you get there at 2 o'clock in the morning, finish his makeup by 7, be on the set, we'd shoot till 7 that night, and he'd go in to take 2 hours to take his makeup off. And you would just see, you know, it was a slog.
Yeah. David Fincher's strange but brilliant The Curious Case of Benjamin Button is on UK-wide release from February the 6th. It's Film Weekly. I'm Jason Solomons, and joining me in the pod to review this week's release is, in the absence of our regular Zan Brooks, we've gone one better. We've got the editor of guardian.co.uk/film, Catherine Shaud. Welcome back, Catherine.
Thank you, Jason. Nice to be here.
Lovely to have you, especially because we've got a big one this week for you. We've got Revolutionary Road, Sam Mendes directing his wife, Kate Winslet, together with Leonardo DiCaprio for the first time since Titanic in Revolutionary Road. Cast your mind back to early 1960s suburban America, where a frustrated housewife and her executive husband are deciding that, in fact, it's better in Paris.
Frank, I have had the most wonderful idea. I've been thinking about it all day.
Baby, what's all this about?
Do you know how much money we have saved? Enough to live on for 6 months without you earning another dime. And with the money we could get from the house and the car, longer than that.
What we could get for the house? Sweetheart, what are you talking about? Where are we going to live?
Paris.
What?
You always said it was the only place you'd ever been that you wanted to go back to, the only place that was worth living. So why don't we go there?
You're serious?
Yes.
So, Catherine, Kate and Leo there, I know you're thrilled about this. Those two big guns back from Titanic, one of your favourite films.
Yeah, and it's interesting casting. Initially, you think, very, very exciting to cast these sort of classic star-crossed lovers now coming back and the dream is soured. And, you know, Richard Yates's novel is so incredibly nasty and depressing and suicidal and anti-love, really.
But brilliant.
Oh, yeah. And a lot better than the film.
Let's start by saying that.
Yeah. And the problem is that, you know, if it was sort of thrillingly misanthropic like the book is, then you'd get that real thrill about it being the people from Titanic. But in fact, it's not. It's just depressing. It's just like a few rows you've had, like a bit worse, and it's just, oh God, it just goes on and on. Oh.
But it's actually not that long a movie. It just feels like a Revolutionary Road. So why is it? Why doesn't it work? What do you think the reasons are for you that it doesn't work? I mean, obviously you've read the book. I've read the book. So obviously books never match up to films. very rarely. Maybe Visconti's The Leopard in the words of my colleague Philip French. I think that's the only good matchup between, but perhaps more of which later.
Well, indeed. Why doesn't it work? I think it's because Mendes is very mannered, and he's not mannered in a Yates way. He's mannered in an American Beauty way. And so it simply becomes another kind of suburban marriage problems movie, and very, 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 very depressing as well. Whereas the book is so much more, and it's so much more vicious, and it's more like There Will Be Blood. You know, it's thrillingly horrible. This is just grim.
Is it grim because it's a disaster in front of your eyes, or is it grim because actually the drama of this young couple's great hopes are being thwarted in front of your eyes?
It's because I think it's entirely predictable. You know, the one time it comes alive really is when Michael Shannon's there, and he's the guy that's got the only big Oscar nod for it as this sort of slightly deranged neighbour's son. Or he's deranged, not the neighbour.
He's the only one that captures for me the tone of the book.
He
seems to have read the book and is bringing that kind of energy and the kind of irony and the tone of that kind of weasel in the cocktail cabinet that he is, scratching away at the surface of this suburbia. And he really is, you don't know what's going to happen next with him, like you don't on the page and like no one else does in the book.
Mm.
So for me, he's great in this and thoroughly deserves his Oscar nomination. Yeah. And you're delighted about that as well, I can see.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, you like Michael Shannon, don't you?
I do. And I think that line where he says at the end, I mean, maybe it's a bit of a spoiler, but probably not, where he says, and there's one thing I really won't want to be, it's that baby. And I think that is going to be the line that people will be quoting for the next year. It's like a milkshake line for me.
Yeah, it's nobody puts baby in the corner.
Yeah.
That's 1950s America. Here's 1950s America, you see. But with that, you see, I won't want to be that baby.
Done,
I like the flip side of what I've done there. I'm very pleased with myself. Let's move on as to what the kind of chemistry that everyone hoped to recapture with Leonardo and Kate. Do you think that's here? Is one of them good? Is one of them better than the other? Because I thought Leonardo was all right in this. I didn't mind him because he looked about sort of 29, someone who just moved into a nice new house in America.
But she looks quite old, actually. She looks like his mum, and I think that's a bit of a mismatch. Do they have chemistry? No, they have familiarity.
There's no sexual frisson, is there? There's no reason why these two fall in love. I don't even think when they're arguing, I think they're just throwing furniture at each other. They're not really kind of annoyed with anything. And for me, it was a very emotionless experience. And I really expected it to kind of strip the heart out of marriage and really kind of be what the book was. I was looking forward to it in a bizarrely perverse kind of way.
It should be cathartic like that. And it should make you come out thrilled with being alive. And it didn't. It's just grim.
And it's very tidy, isn't it? And do you think some of its aesthetic impact was stolen by Mad Men? I mean, months before this film even came along, those scenes of people in Central Station with their hats on. I mean, come on, A, you did all hats and people in raincoats in that other boring film you made, Road to Perdition.
Mm.
And B, I've seen it all in Mad Men on telly anyway, much better.
And it's really interesting that in America, it's really, despite all the amazing Golden Globes win and the big push and amazing ad campaigns, nobody's going to see it. It's really, really doing bad.
People are saying it's a turn-off because it's so depressing. I've seen the trailer for it, which you can see on YouTube, and it's got this wonderful Nina Simone track playing over it, and them all shouting each other and throwing whiskey glasses and stuffing cigarettes out, and you think, oh, that looks quite good. Nina Simone track's not in the film, it's only on the trailer, and it's the best bit.
Mm.
So there you go.
Ghost figures.
Catherine, let's move on to a literary adaptation of another kind. Barry Lyndon is out this week, re-released as part of a Kubrick season down at the BFI South Bank, playing on the National Film Theatre in this perfect ratio that you think Stanley would have been very pleased to see it projected in. It's an adaptation of a Thackeray novel, so perhaps this is one of those great literary classics that does match up to its screen projection. Barry Lyndon.
Raise your hands high above your head, please. Come forward. Stop. How do you do? I'm Captain Feeney.
Captain Feeney?
Captain Feeney at your service.
The Captain Feeney?
None other. May I introduce you to my son, Seamus?
How do you do?
How do you do?
To whom have I the honor of speaking?
My name's Redmond Barry.
How do you do, Mr. Barry? And now I'm afraid we must get on to the more regrettable stage of our brief acquaintance. Turn around and keep your hands high above your head, please.
That's Ryan O'Neill being apprehended in Barry Lyndon, Stanley Kubrick's 187 minutes of Thackeray. That's a long time by anyone's book.
It is, but compared to Revolutionary Road, it's, you know, but a heartbeat.
Is it good?
It's quite good, yeah, it's quite good. I mean, it wasn't at the time, it was... It was rather ridiculed.
1975, this is.
Yes, that's right. I remember it well. And but it was, you know, looking back at it now, it just seems amazingly quick and beautiful and well acted and just fantastically on the money about money and things like that. It's just wonderful. And I think any film that kind of kicks off with Leonard Rosser in a very heavy bit of acting, you know, he's dead by the first half hour, is for me just a perfect
film. Hilarious in it.
Fantastic.
Oh, everyone's brilliant in it. Stephen Burkhoff's in it playing some sort of French count. Playing, they're doing some gambling and he's going, oh, we don't know. And I thought, God, you look like Kristin Scott Thomas. I don't think I'll tell her that when I see her.
No, I shouldn't. He'd like that though.
Yeah, I think he looks... I just thought that everything about this, the compositions were fantastic. The camera work is brilliant. The production design, which is by Ken Adam, who's normally known for doing the Bond sets, had much more fun here. Really went to town with the beautiful kind of stately homes. Is this the best? I was thinking as I was watching it, is this the best costume drama ever made?
Yeah, because it's you know, it's pacey as well, and it's not bogged
down. At 187 minutes, it's still pacey.
Yeah, it certainly is there, isn't it? And you don't have all the tedious kind of social comedy that you get in kind of substandard.
Yeah, there's no fans.
Oh my God, there's no Alison Steadman. You know,
there's no Judy Dench.
Yes, no Eileen Atkins.
Yeah.
I mean, all nice things, and probably wouldn't have been bad in this, but, you know, oh, yeah, it's just refreshing. Even though it's 75, it's very long, it's a costume drama. And Ryan O'Neill, you know, I was sort of thinking back, because I'd seen it ages ago, and I thought, he's terrible, isn't he? He's meant to be really terrible. And actually, he's not so bad.
No.
He's like a woman. He's very, and that's what's very good. That's what Thackeray does very well, is Becky Sharp. He's like Becky Sharp. And it's really...
The
really
true Thackeray hero doesn't need to wear the wig, because that's Rebecca Sharp. She always had her normal hair. And Ryan O'Neill has these wonderful flowing locks. I mean, the hair products in there, fabulous.
Lovely.
But and Marissa Berenson is actually gorgeous as his sort of put upon wife, the one he married. So it's about money grabbing. It seemed very relevant as I was watching it. Even though it was made in 75, I thought not just its themes were relevant, obviously, because that's Thackeray. He's quite good at that sort of thing. But it's actually the style, was it? You know, when you watch something like Tom Jones, The Fielding's Tom Jones, with that, it's all kind of shot in a kind of, oh, aren't we 60s? Aren't we fast cutting? Mm. This one is just still really cool.
Mm.
And I'm not a massive Kubrick fan, except I really admired the artistry here, the long gliding cameras. I think it's probably what Saul Dibb tried to do in The Duchess, I thought, as I was watching this.
Yeah.
Didn't work quite, did it?
not quite the same, but a good thing to aim for. And yeah, it does feel more topical, and it does feel very noughties, actually, and very sort of very, you know, this bloke being money grabbing and marrying and being like a woman, and I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah, it got richer as it went on. Even the bare knuckle fight, I thought was extraordinary, with Pat Roach, the wrestler, one of my favourite wrestlers of all time, better than Mickey Rourke even. Catherine, let's move on to discuss JCVD.
Violence. That's on film, Your Honour. The legitimacy of violence. How does this actor play death? Let me count the ways. Mangled under the wheels of a truck. Strangulation. Fracturing the skull. Taking out the tibula.
Mr. Van Damme.
There were low budgets.
Mr. Van Damme.
Every of my movie were having heart.
Laceration. Crushed under the vehicles of a car. Death by strangulation. Crushed ribs.
I make money with this. I feed them.
Please be seated.
Not about money.
Fracturing the skull.
Ready. One more.
Gouging
again.
Out the eyes.
Again.
Kicks to the groin.
Can I go restroom,
crushed
please?
Crushed under the vehicles of a car.
Thank you.
Crushed under the wheels of a truck.
It's a strange piece, this one, after all, isn't it? Shot in the murky grey, kind of green light in Brussels. I half expected all the Dardenne brothers to pop up and Jeremy Renier running along nicking some kid. But
that would have helped, I think.
Would you think they might have given it something a bit more?
I mean, it's one of these things that you hear a lot about, you're very excited by, and you think, ooh, interesting. But, you know, if it had been 5 years ago, if it had been pre-Kaufman and pre all these other things, one might have thought it was a bit, you know, a bit exciting. But actually, it's a real disappointment, I think. It's quite boring. It's not nearly as risk-taking as it thinks it is. It looks awful. It's quite hard to watch, I think. And it's quite It's just dull.
It keeps jumping backwards and forwards in time as well. I'm not really sure what reason.
I suspect it thinks it's been clever, but actually you just think, ooh, have they sort of messed around the reels here? Yeah, I don't know. I just...
You're a Jean-Claude... I can't see you being a big Jean-Claude Van Damme completist.
You know, I actually am. I do. And in fact, I've even seen Until Death, his straight-to-DVD one from a few years ago, which was a lot better. I like him a lot. I often say that classic line where he goes... Can't probably say it, can I? But he says, au revoir, motherfucker. That's one of my favourite
quotable When do you lines. Use this line?
Oh, constantly.
Actually, you know, not coming round to dinner calls. At yours. Calls the lot. The action scene at the beginning was really good, though. Sort of it one was. Long shot of action scene. I thought it was really well done.
That was exciting. But, I mean, that's what they're sort of saying, you know, that's what they're sending up and snooty about. And it's hard to sort of enjoy something that, you know, you're meant to be sneering at.
Let us draw an end to this week's reviews. It's an absolute pleasure to have you, Catherine Shaw, ladies and gentlemen.
Nice to be here.
Now, this Saturday, the 30th of January, here in London, a very important award is to be handed out by my colleague Peter Bradshaw. The prize is the Guardian First Film Award for 2008. And the shortlist was a very strong one. It included Anton Corbijn's Control, Persepolis by Vincent Parano and Marjan Satrapi, and The Orphanage, or El Orfanato, by Juan Antonio Bayona. However, amongst all of those great films, it was a British director, Joanna Hogg, who took the prize for her debut film, Unrelated. And I'm delighted to say that Joanna joins me in the podcast studio now. Welcome to Film Weekly, Joanna, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
This was voted for by our Guardian readers as well. So A, it means they like the film, and B, they've seen it. So I think for a first-time film, that's probably the first hurdle to jump.
Well, it was very... I was really surprised and obviously absolutely delighted.
Thoroughly deserves as well. Not the first award you've got. I remember you getting up on stage at the London Film Festival not this year, last year.
It was actually 2007 and we got the Fipreski Award.
Right, so it's a long journey that one makes with a film like this. So you've been sort of touting it and selling it and going around with it for sort of 2 years now.
Yes, I mean, it's not something I'm doing obviously every day. And I feel that today actually it feels like a while since I've actually been talking about Unrelated, because I'm now well into getting together my next film.
Oh, brilliant. But, it's always good to hear that when someone does a good first film that they have got something else lined up.
Well, yes.
Because so often in the British industry, I find that, you know, the directors have great breakthroughs and it takes 4 or 5 years to get another one going.
I know. Well, I really want to try and keep the momentum going. And actually, I'm trying to. I'm not very good at this. I'm trying to develop more than one thing at a time because I tend to be someone who just concentrates on one thing and that's the only thing. And I think in this climate right now, that's a bit risky to do. So I'm actually juggling, I would say, 3 or 4 things.
Oh, brilliant. Well, we'll talk about those in a minute. But let's go back to Unrelated, if you could cast your mind that far back.
Yes.
So, Joanna, for anyone who hasn't seen it, and I'm afraid there are those who haven't yet, because it's out on DVD February the 2nd, which is very, very exciting as well. So the next opportunity you get is to see this family drama set in a Tuscan villa. You take the story from here, Joanna.
Okay, that's right. It's a story about Anna, who is married in her mid-40s but doesn't have any children. And she's invited to Tuscany to a girlfriend of hers who she's known since school, to her villa that she's rented for the summer. And she arrives without a husband because at the last minute he has work to do. And she gradually, and it's a slow burn, it's not a film that has, you know, a fast pace to it, yet it's sort of very, has a momentum to it. And Anna, who is having difficulties in her marriage and also coming to terms with not having children. And she is also someone who's never really had a wild teenage time in her life. So she kind of starts to relive that, or rather live it for the first time, through the teenage children of her friend.
But in the clip we're going to hear, it's Catherine Worth, who plays Anna, meeting up with her school friend, who's now a mum to three kids in the Tuscan villa.
So you can't have fun with me and Charlie and George? You're only our oldest friend. Well, my oldest friend, anyway. Well, look, I mean, all the bother I went to get your ticket sorted for, you know, and... You're looking silly.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just that things have been a bit difficult at home, and you know, it's just nice just to.
What's the matter with? You know, there's always something wrong. I asked you what was going on with Alex. You haven't told me anything. You don't sit up and talk to me. You don't come in the. You know, you don't even want to come in the car with me.
So there you go. That's Catherine Worth and...
Mary Roscoe, who plays Verena.
Right. I mean, and it's one of those relationships that you understand quite quickly, that the kind of bond that these two women have. I just wondered if this, you know, it seems such a familiar scenario. But it's the sort of thing we don't see that often in British film.
That's right. I mean, I don't know why that is exactly, but it's something that I wouldn't say I've exactly had those kind of holidays myself, but I've observed them and I have sometimes participated in quite a peripheral way to situations like that. So I find it very fascinating. And actually, that relationship that you describe between Anna and Verena, in a way, we don't need to say that much about it because you understand quite quickly what that friendship that's been ongoing for many years, but it's clear they've sort of lost contact as well.
Did you go off to a villa in Tuscany with all these people and then work on your script with them? Or did you have a very tight script already?
Well, no, it's interesting, actually, because I already knew the place where we made the film, intimately, in fact, because I was renting with my husband a flat very near the villa where we set
the
film.
Where
is it? It's about 15 minutes south of Siena.
Okay, just in case we get all those, you know, like those people who went to Captain Corelli's island, they might all end up in Siena, so that's good.
Well, the family who own the estate would actually be delighted if that happened.
We've got a bit of rental details at the end on our blog. Brilliant.
Absolutely. But anyway, so I was spending quite a bit of time there, actually working on other ideas for other scripts. And then sometimes I'd be there over a summer and I would observe British people renting this house, and I would observe their behaviour. And at a certain point, I thought, well, this would be a really interesting place to set a film.
You said yourself that it's a slow burn. I mean, I think that's the attraction of the movie. The layers come off. You've kind of described Catherine Worth's character Anna quite well, but in fact, she's more of an onion, isn't she? You the first time we meet her, we're not quite sure about all that backstory that you've given her. We kind of really only get the full picture right in the last scene.
That's right.
Was that the method that you always wanted to adopt as a filmmaker, and where did you get that idea from? Because as I say, it's not something that we're used to.
Well, I have to say I was longing to make a film in which I didn't have to explain the backstory of every character. And having worked in television for many years, that was exactly what you had to do.
Because you'd done EastEnders, didn't you?
Exactly. And there's a lot of backstory in EastEnders. In fact, there's sort of nothing but. So I wanted, not out of perversity, but just because I think it's more interesting to reveal gradually.
And we've also got you at My Critics Awards next Wednesday as well, where you're up against Martin McDonagh, Steve McQueen, who else? Rupert Wyatt, The Escapist, and James Watkins from Eden Lake. So it would be delightful to see you there as well. Best of luck there.
Thank you very much. No, it's just very exciting to be nominated.
And does it work, this kind of, you know, critical acclaim? Because people now will say, oh, well, she did Unrelated. Let's give her some more money for a next one.
Well,
I'm
waiting for that to happen, actually. And right now, for one of my projects, we're trying to get the money together. So,
but do you think, well, I'll try a bigger budget next time? Because that people might get, well, are you very much going to stay in that kind of limits?
I'm going to try and stay within those limits. I think it's much more rewarding and actually rather appropriate for this climate right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Well, I mean, it is a fascinating piece, Unrelated, that keeps you absolutely hooked through your direction style, which, as I say, is very rare to British cinema and a pleasure to see.
Thank you very much.
Performance from Catherine Worth as well, an actress who I'd never seen before, and explodes onto the screen in this film. Where'd you get her from?
She trained as an actress at RADA about 25 years ago, and she'd... She'd gone or sort of tried to go into theatre, but she experienced quite a bit of stage fright. And so theatre doesn't come naturally to her. And for one reason or another, the film roles didn't come her way. So I found her actually working as an assistant to a casting director. And she is absolutely brilliant. And I hope we will see a lot more of her on our cinema screens.
Hey, they've got the actual star working for them, and then they're sitting there going up a line, and they can't see it when it's right next to them.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, because she is actually incredibly talented, and her talent has been completely hidden from the world until now.
Joanna Hogg, lovely to see you. Thank you so much for coming on Film Weekly. Congratulations on all the awards, but on the Guardian First Film Award, which you get next Saturday. We've got a competition a bit later to give away 3 of your DVDs, so 3 more people are going to go see Unrelated.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. And as I said, to celebrate Joanna's directing debut, we've three copies of the DVD of Unrelated up for grabs. All you've got to do is tell me the answer to this rather tenuous classic film weekly style question. One of the stars of Joanna's film Unrelated, Tom Hiddleston, is a young British actor. Now, he is tenuously connected to another great British actor-director in three ways, through a play, through a TV show, and through this Tuscan location. Tell me, who is Tom Hiddleston connected to via those three things? And tell me what those three things I'm referring to are. It's a difficult question, but it's a great prize, and you can do it. You're Film Weekly listener, so you're ingenious. Do send me your answers by next Tuesday, the 3rd of February, at film.weekly@guardian.co.uk. film.weekly@guardian.co.uk. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks to all my guests on the show, to Joanna Hogg, to David Fincher, and to Catherine Shaw, of course. If you want the inside track on the film world, do check out my trailer trash column in this week's Observer and our Oscar spread. But for now, from me, Jason Solomons, and my producer on Film Weekly, Jason Phipps, it's goodbye.